It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, coming at you here with my, as-per-usual sidekick, Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? Thinking about reverting over to being a Minnesota fan tonight, so bear with me.
It's been a rough, well, week since our last recording, too, because...
It's this Packer week one. You'd think I'd be in a better mood, but I'm not. Come on.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on and a lot to talk about. But yes, we will finally get to start talking about a Packer, kind of prep show here and start talking about what is going to happen with the Packers coming up this week. So at least that's some kind of a benefit here. And hopefully we can start rolling towards something better than what we've had this last week. But anyhow, thank you again, everybody, for joining us this week, joining us every week as you do, and we're grateful to have you with us. And wherever you do listen to us, remember to please subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. It does help other people find the show. We've definitely gotten our large, growing community in Virginia for whatever reason, which has been just fun to watch. But additionally, we've gotten our friends in Australia to start listening to the show in the last couple of weeks.
I know, in Western Australia, we love thee. Amen.
So, we'll just get started right into it, and we will start with Packers and what we lovingly call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron, we have Packers football, like we said. The big thing I want to start with, before we get into games and what's coming up this next week, because I want to kind of end with that in the Packers section that we have here. The first big news is that there's been some talk now, and Aaron Jones apparently went on Good Morning Football, which is like a weird way of speaking to, I imagine, an anthropomorphized football. Like, good morning, football. How are you?
Is that good. Like cold pizza? What was the name of that show?
No, that's gone. That was Cold Pizza turned into whatever it was. I think it eventually turned into First Take, mutated.
It ended up being First Take in the long run, yes.
Good Morning Football, I believe, is the NFL Network version that they've got out now. So that's kind of where that is. But the talk that happened here is that Aaron Jones said that, yes, his agent is in talk with the Packers here to get a long-term deal done. There's a lot of mixed feelings going on around Packer Twitter about that. A lot of people specifically retweeting that saying, this is not good news. And if anybody's listening is not sure about that, the thing they're trying to say is that signing a long-term guy who is a running back who has already played through his initial contract is not a good idea financially speaking, locking up your money in running backs. And we could bring on Paul Noonan to definitely describe how that's a financial asset that you don't want to necessarily be carrying. But right. The other thing, though, is that Aaron Jones is a great talent, and you definitely want to keep great talent on your team. So one of the great questions I saw today, and I'm forgetting who said it, but it was such a good question. I can't think of it. It might have been Pete Bukowski or somebody like that. It was like, what is a good deal for Aaron Jones that is both a good deal for both sides, the team and Aaron Jones? And he said, you can't say nothing because that's not a good deal for Aaron Jones.
Right.
And that's a hard one to get at. He's going to be somebody will pay something in the neighborhood of $10 million a year to, right?
Right.
Based on what we're seeing for other running backs and such who... I mean, he led the league in touchdowns. He had 1,000 yards rushing. He's also a great receiving threat. He's a guy who could definitely get at least 10 to 14 million a year, probably.
What did Travis Henry got 12, right? That's kind of like the standard bearer these days, like Christian McCaffrey's at 15. Zeke Elliott, who plays for the team that obviously doesn't have to follow salary cap rules, the Cowboys, makes $14 million. And then how do they pay a quarterback franchise tag? Him, the highest, one of the highest paid running backs. Amari Cooper's one of the highest paid wide receiver. Anyways, we won't get into that.
They have no depth is the big thing. So, yeah.
True story. But anyways, so... Yeah, so Travis Henry is 12. I mean, what I'm guessing whatever – he's probably just looking across the border to Minnesota and down to Louisiana to Kamara to kind of come up with a number, because those three running backs are very comparable in almost every facet. I mean, Cook, Jones, and Kamara, they're all different in their own way because everyone's unique. You know, we're all snowflakes. But it's – you know, they're very comparable – you know, talent-wise. I mean, if you were to plug any one of them into each other's position on the other team, they would probably have about the same results. So I would say Aaron Jones is a little bit more durable, but he doesn't get used as much because he's got Jamal Williams. And then Kamara was out for a while, too. Last year he was injured a lot, right?
Somewhat. I mean, he was there, but yeah, he didn't play quite as well last year as he had previously.
So I'm guessing it's going to be $10 million for all of them, but who's going to pay them? That's the thing. It's not going to be a team that's paying a lot of money for a quarterback. So it's one of those things. It's such a weird position too. Like, you know, like Aaron Jones, the three people I was just talking about, especially Delvin Cook, who's like the centerpiece for the Minnesota offense over there. And everybody knows it. The offense runs through Delvin Cook, but you're not going to pay him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a weird thing to like, hey, we need you. You're so key to our team. Blah, 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 blah. In the meantime, but we're not going to pay you. And all the fans are like, yeah, well, we're going to lose him at the end of the year. Don't pay him. You don't put money into running backs. Like, how much motivation does that give you as a running back, like, to, like, do better?
Well, and look at this. These are some of the guys we're talking about. You threw out some numbers, but here it is on SpotTrack. Like, Elliott, $15 million average per year. Mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey, 16. He's definitely in a McCaffrey kind of mold, in that they were very close to each other in a lot of categories last year, total yards and touchdowns. Le'Veon Bell is well past his prime. He's 27. He's been kind of on the downside of his career.
That's why Pittsburgh let him go.
Yeah, and
three years ago.
$13 million. Yeah, Henry, like you said, $12.5 million average. I guess here's the one that's probably going to be the one that ties it up for right now is Joe Mixon just got a new deal.
Yeah, I did.
$12 million average. So that's what I'm saying, like somewhere in that $12 million range, because that's the guy going into his second contract, and you know has produced, but has had some, you know, I guess, staying on the field stuff. Like he's had some injuries, Joe Mixon, definitely did not have the year last year that he had the year prior. It's going to be interesting to see what he does.
It's gonna be hard pressed for Aaron Jones and the other two, and I'll lump them in there because they're all in the same kind of boat. Delvin Cook's in a little bit weirder boat because I think he's a year younger, but anyways, in different parts of their contract. But and Delvin Cook was a first round pick; the other two weren't. Anyways, that's why Delvin Cook's got that. No, Delvin Cook wasn't a first round pick, was he?
No, he was a second, I believe.
Second,
but yeah. This
Kamara was like a fourth, and Jones was a fifth, right?
Yeah, and so that's the thing is like they're going to be in that area where those guys are all looking for new contracts. My guess is they're all looking for something around Joe Mixon money. They all want that 12. If you're going to say something that's good for everybody, it's going to be hard to try to pick a number like that, because then you have to talk about saying, you know, he hasn't produced more than just the 1 year. He's definitely had the talent to produce all the years he's been here, but he has not given us the things. He's had one big year. If you're going to sign him based on one big year, you don't give him Ezekiel Elliott or Joe Mixon. Well, Joe Mixon money. You somewhere around $8 million maybe. But I don't know that that's necessarily good for the team in the long run. I mean, you have to cut somewhere then.
And I mean, the team just drafted Corey Dillon. So, I mean, he's AJ there Dillon with his giant thighs. I know what I said. But the thing is too, is like with Dylan versus Aaron Jones, like they're not even close to the same back. So
no, but that's the other thing too, is what is the back he wants for this coaching staff?
Right.
And it looks like, I mean, if you got Jamal Williams, who he is the same basic size as Aaron Jones. You don't believe it because they don't run the same.
No, they don't.
But they are basically the same size.
Yeah.
And but Jamal Williams runs more straight up downfield. He's also a very good pass catcher. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it might be that they're just moving towards the next thing. The reason they drafted the running back is almost certainly because they're looking down the road and saying that they're not going to sign Aaron Jones. You have to kick the tires on the idea to see if you can get it done because you want to try it. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. I don't know how they work it to make it valuable.
And, you know, obviously Green Bay is moving more towards a model of what San Francisco has put together. And who's San Francisco's number one running back? Because I can't get Mostert out of my head because Mostert was actually the number three running back. He just gouged the heck out of the Packers in the NFC Championship game. So I can't get rid of his name out of my head. But who's their number one running back? I forget.
I guess I thought it was Mostert. They still have Tevin Coleman. They had Jerick, was it McKinnon? The former Viking.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if they've got anybody else in there. I still thought it was Mostert. I can pull up the depth chart very quickly here.
But either way, I mean, they're a three-headed monster, too, to an extent. I mean, Travis Henry is there in Nashville, but they're kind of a two-headed monster, too. And I can see that's where they're kind of going to. It's weird that the NFL, as it became a pass-happy league, is now reverting back to these run-heavy double-wing offenses, you know, from the 1940s and the big running backs, big bruising Jim Taylor running backs, you know, that smash the middle of the field.
It's the swing. And everybody went towards passing. And so, of course, then the way you need to adjust to that in pass catching running backs is you say, I need smaller linebackers that can cover. And then you say, like, if I can get a big running back, I can just smash these little linebackers. So, Mostert is still the starter there. Tevin Coleman backup, Jerick McKinnon third, and then Jeff Wilson.
For some reason, I thought Coleman was the starter. I don't know why. But, anyway, so. And then Khrushchev is their fullback. So,
Khrushchev, nice.
So, either way, and that's what we're trying to accomplish, too. So, no, I mean, it's real obvious what the Packers are doing. So, I mean, Aaron Jones is nice, but it's like, is he going to survive in this offense? Or are they lining up to have Jamal Williams take over as a starter next year with Dylan as the backup, and then they pick up another big running back after that, and you just every year you just draft a new big running back, and after 3 years you cycle out the old guy. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
It really does.
They're set up to right now with Aaron Jones at the front, then Williams, and now Dylan. Jones is gone this year. You know, Williams sticks around next year, barring any major injuries. Dylan's got another year underneath him, and then you draft a new kid, you know, until one of them pops as a star. And you can get these guys in the second, third round, and you just run the wheels off them until they, you know, till the tread wears off.
So. And you can find a backup somewhere who can be something like this too. You know, you can find that space where you say, like, yeah, I've got a guy. He can't be every, you know, Adrian Peterson just landed on another team. He's with the Lions now. And you're like, because I don't need him to do a ton. But if I do need somebody to step in and give us some kind of one game of 25 carries, I've got somebody.
Right. Adrian Peterson will gouge the Packers for 120 yards in one game as a Lion this year. You just know it. Like, absolutely not. He doesn't have the talent level anymore, but he will find a way to gouge the Packers for 120 and three touchdowns in a game. You watch it. He will. Somehow. It'll be his last gasp. That's why he came to the Lions, so he had two shots to do it against the Packers.
Here's the one thing that gets me about the Lions doing this is Adrian Peterson is fifth all-time in rushing yards. Do you know who's fourth?
Jim Brown.
No, Barry Sanders.
Oh, Barry Sanders. Oh, yeah, that's right. He is fourth, isn't he?
So his next stop is to pass Barry Sanders as a Lion. That bothers me. I guess that would hurt my heart.
If I were
a Lions fan, that would bug me. But I'm not.
Emmitt Smith's number one.
Yeah.
Number two.
Number two, I think, is still, isn't that still Sweetness? Let's see. We can check that out.
Oh, yeah, duh. Yeah, Walter Payton. God, I don't know why I did. Yeah, so it's, boy, I just lost some credibility there. So Smith, Payton, Jim Brown, Barry Sanders.
Let's look it up. Frank Gore is actually third now.
Well, Frank Gore is third, and then Barry Sanders is fourth, Adrian Peterson fifth, Jim Brown sixth, Jamal Anderson.
Oh, no, several people have passed Jim Brown by now because Jim Brown is all the way down to 11th. So it's Emmitt Smith. Suppose
Jim Brown only had 12 games a year to work with, too.
And he didn't play his full career because he quit to be in movies.
That's right.
Of course, Barry Sanders quit early, too. Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Frank Gore, Barry Sanders, Adrian Peterson, Curtis Martin, sixth.
Curtis Martin, that's who I was trying to come, not Jamal Anderson. Curtis Martin sneakily has so many yards. 14, he's like 000. Frank Gore, just was around forever.
Yeah, and still productive forever. Frank Gore's not even done.
I had Frank Gore on one of my fantasy football teams 2 years ago, and he was producing.
And he's at not age retired. 38. Not retired.
No, he's not. He's on the Bills still, right?
No, I think he's with the Jets now. He's had to bounce around again. He's never going to quit. One day he'll pass Emmitt Smith and be like, that man is still alive.
So after Curtis Martin, then it'd be
LaDainian Tomlinson. Marshall Faulk?
Oh, LT. Okay.
Then Jerome Bettis, Eric Dickerson, Tony Dorsett. Marshall Faulk is actually behind Jim Brown by less than 100 yards.
I suppose. Actually, Marshall Faulk didn't play that long either. And he was kind of a flash in the pan 4 years. Too.
And he had kind of a downtime after his initial spurt in Indianapolis. He had a little downtime and then, ended high.
Yeah, because he played first 2 or 3 years in Indianapolis, right?
Yep.
And then he went to,
Then he went to the Rams.
The Rams, and the Rams weren't supposed to be good, and then all of a sudden they had...
Yep. But as we're going through this, though, and looking at all these other people, I do want to take a look at what we've got on the roster for the Packers this year.
A couple weeks ago.
And the biggest thing with the Packers roster at this point is that we basically don't have any surprises because we didn't watch any preseason. So,
well, touchdown Jesus is gone. That was kind of,
but not terribly. Like, you're not hurt by it, are you? I mean, like, so many people are like, oh man, Kumaro. I was like, okay.
Part of the reason why he made the team last year is because St. Brown got hurt in the preseason.
And
he probably wouldn't have made the team if St. Brown would not got hurt last year. So,
if you're going to keep somebody around at this point, who's kind of an okay talent, you can't put him on the practice squad. He's been on 3 practice squads already. He played a full year.
Now he's on the Bills practice squad too.
I thought he wasn't even eligible anymore. Okay. All right.
Yeah, the Bills picked him up on the practice squad.
Interesting. Well, and I guess I haven't paid attention to how much they've changed because some of the practice squad rules did change a little bit. Josh McCown is on a practice squad as the emergency quarterback. And I forget where, but that's amazing to me because he's 72 years old, everybody. 72-year-old
Josh
McCown.
Still better than anything they have in Chicago right now.
This is true.
Yes.
So, Jake Kumerow is gone, and it hurts people from Whitewater, people who went to Whitewater, and people liked him. He was a nice guy, but, I mean, he was not. And let's not pretend that there wasn't some of it that said, like, hey, man, it's cool to see a white receiver for our team because somebody definitely felt that way. He was not a particularly fantastic player. He was a guy who could run his routes as needed. He was a replacement level sort of thing. Like, you can find a bunch of guys who do what he does, and the Packers did. And I guess Begelton made it onto the practice squad, didn't make the active roster, but Shepard cut again. Darius Shepard, who should never have been on the team last year.
I just love that everybody compares Kumerow to Jeff Janis, and that's not fair because Jeff Janis was a much better talent than Kumerow was.
Yes, he athletically completely different players. Kumerow was a fast enough guy who was a good route runner and could be in the spot you expected him to be. Jeff Janis was like Bill Schrader. They were athletically freaks. Bill Schrader still holds every school decathlon record at UW Lacrosse, I think.
Right.
But at least he did when I was there, which has been a while now, and I'm not going to talk about that. But,
everybody forgets that Schrader existed. I'm serious.
He
was our top wide receiver for like 3 years.
Well, at least the one. Yeah, we had a couple injuries and stuff. But, I mean, and then he went on and played with the Lions for a couple years when they had him and Azaire Akeem. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, Janis and Schrader were magnificently gifted athletically and tall, fast, strong guys, and they just weren't necessarily NFL talents other than their innate, you know, abilities, or, you know, I guess enhanced abilities from all their working to get where they were and their God-given strengths. But I mean, that's where they were. Whereas Kumar was kind of a scrappy guy who just continued to stay there. He's like a less capable Julian Edelman, trying to think of somebody else who's just kind of like, he just continues to find a way to stay on a roster. I'm trying to think of who else in that kind of mold kind of fits with like Packer stuff, even. Because he's not like, you know, James Jones, who was much stronger.
James Jones is a very good receiver. In his prime, James Jones was top 10.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Top 15 wide receiver in the NFL. And he did lead the league in touchdowns 1 year.
Yeah,
he was not. He didn't even have 1,000 yards receiving, but he led the league in touchdown receptions.
He's a guy who you knew where he was going to be. He was going to catch the ball if you threw it to him, except for the 1 year where he was injured, and everybody remembered that year for far too long. And he was not going to be a number one on anybody's team, but he was always a good two or three. And that's a better version, a more gifted version of Kumerow, basically.
Right, and everyone forgets too that prior to Jordy Nelson really coming on the scene, that James Jones was actually the number two to Jennings. And then think about that. The Packers had Jennings, Cobb, Nelson, and Jones as wide receivers at one point
on
the same team. And Driver in his later years. He was the number five wide receiver.
That's almost where I went too, because I was like, Driver was a guy you always felt like, man, he just kind of keeps finding his way to being good enough. But then you forget too that he was an Olympic quality high jumper. You're like, no, he was an insane athletic ability.
Donald Driver's best reception of his career was, I think, in his second to last year against the 49ers in the brown helmet uniforms that the Packers wear. Do you remember that one where he got down the right sideline and he like was hucking wide receiver? He was hucking D-backs into the sidelines. Little tiny Donald Driver was hucking people left and right. It was the highlight of his career. It was the best. And he had a lot of highlights. Donald Driver was around for a long time, but that one was it. And he was pushing 36, 37 years old at that point, you know, so
he's an incredible athlete. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of sticking around, I'm going to run you through this one. Here's Josh McCown's career history. Cardinals, Lions, Cardinals 02-05, Lions 06, Raiders 07, Dolphins 08, only on the practice squad. Carolina 08-09, Hartford Colonials 2010, San Francisco 49ers 2011, only on the practice squad. Chicago Bears, I forgot he was the Bears quarterback for 11-13. Tampa Bay 14, Cleveland Browns 15-16, New York Jets 17-18, Philadelphia Eagles 19 to present.
And he was a high school coach in a little bit of that time, too. Like, he had retired before the Bears brought him out.
That is 11 NFL teams. That is more than one-third of the NFL he's played for.
That's an interesting line.
He won the Brian Piccolo Award in 2014, by the way, which I don't even know what that is, but he won it.
Brian's song, that's all I know of Brian Piccolo.
Oh, it's given to a Bears player. Never mind. It's not worth it.
Well, then it goes. That's why I don't know about it. Yeah. Anyhow, this week there's a game. There's an actual game. And
the Packers. The Expos?
No. So the Packers are going to play the Vikings on Sunday. It's going to be a Sunday game. It's not a Thursday or a Monday or anything like that. It's a Sunday game. And we're going to have Packers Vikings to start everything off. And Vikings Twitter is already fully aboard for their preseason we still exist moments before they fade back into the oblivion of, like, I'm really a Wild fan first and then, you know, a Viking fan, and, you know, really hoping the Twins and then maybe the Vikings. I'll remind you again that I had this where I lived in the Twin Cities when they went 15-1 with Randy Moss in that rookie year, and after they lost to the Giants, which I wasn't in town for that. I was ice fishing up northern Wisconsin. But I came back, went to the Mall of America a week later, and Vikings stuff was 50% off in the Mall of America, and nobody was buying it. It was just, they couldn't give it away because everyone was done. Nobody was buying a Vikings thing that day. They were done with it. And that's Minnesota sports for, well, more for football than a lot of other things, but it's it's a weird place sometimes.
So that was 15-1. That was a Gary Anderson missed kick, right?
Yes, I was definitely by a truck ice fishing on was it Thunder Lake? Where I forget where I was exactly. I think that's where it was though, with my uncle, my cousin, my brother. I think one of my other uncles was there too, and we were out there ice fishing. When he missed that, I heard it on the radio.
Right, that was the year. That was the Ray Rhodes year for the Packers too, wasn't it? So we didn't have a good year.
No, 98. Yes, yeah, 8-8.
Yeah, that was right after Holmgren left too. That's right. That was a source. That's right. That was a high point for us. And I think the next year they lost to the Giants 41 donut. Something in the NFC Championship game.
I think it was a couple years later, but.
Yeah, so Brody from Chaska and all those Viking super fans are piping off already. It's great. And then I just love that they love to hammer on Packer fans for living in the past. And yet, if you bring up that we won the division last year, they'll go, okay, well, what about 2 years ago? It's like, wait.
I love that. There's one going around. They're like this, you know, because they're showing that one of like Aaron Rodgers trying to drink a beer quickly and wherever, and they're like, you can't even beat this beer. How do you think he's going to beat the Vikings? You're like, well, he's 14-8 against the Vikings and swept you last year. That's probably how.
Yeah.
Oh, and the already setting up the blaming the refs started immediately, even though the Vikings were flagged fewer times last year than the Packers. It's amazing. Here's the big thing that I think is going to be that gives me the most hope about this team is the Vikings are starting so many new people. Oh man, I was looking at I had to pull back up my depth chart on the Vikings here because it's a little, it's kind of strange at times. Because
God, I really wish Riley Reiff would have left the Vikings.
Well,
God, that would have, if they would have just lost their left tackle a week before the season started because they were too cheap to, and they had to go get another defensive player instead of paying their offensive lineman, and he stuck around because he knew he couldn't get a job anywhere else.
Yeah, Riley Reiff. Yeah, so I mean, like their offensive line is still just, beautiful, for me. Riley Reiff,
yes.
Dakota Dozier, Garrett Bradbury, who was not good. He's the only center. Pat Elflein, I guess, is the backup center playing right guard. And yeah, Brian,
they drafted them 2 years in a row.
Brian O'Neill, and Ole Odoh is. I'm not joking. That's a human being's name. Is the backup right tackle.
Yeah, you got to remember too that Elflein was originally their starting center 2 years ago.
Was a decent center.
It was decent. Then they drafted Elflein and moved him to guard where he's not as good.
Yeah, Elflein has not been as good a guard. He was a decent center out of Ohio State, I believe. But that offensive line is not good.
It kills me that when they went and got Ngakoue,
they almost cut Riley Reiff.
They were under $200,000 under cap space. And the person they were going to cut was Riley Reiff, their starting left tackle for the last 3 years, who's a C-minus, D-plus player at best. But the thing is, who was behind him? And I was just frothing at the mouth, just like, oh, my God, please let him go and just have whoever they're going to start at left tackle. But then Riley Reiff even came to the understanding that he knew that if he wanted to go play for another team, he wouldn't be a starter anywhere else because he's not good enough to be a starter anywhere else because the Minnesota Vikings offensive line is so bad that it's completely staffed with second and third stringers. Riley Reiff is the best player they have on that line, and he is a backup left tackle in most locations.
Yeah, they've got Rashad Hill as the backup left tackle. Now, I would almost have to believe that they'd do something else and get Ezra Cleveland on the field before they put Rashad Hill out there, though.
Right.
A couple surprises here that actually came out. Vikings officially listed BC Johnson as the number two wide receiver on their team. Justin Jefferson is the third wide receiver.
I have no idea who BC Johnson is.
Yes. Yes. No, I mean, I know of him. He played in games last year, exists as a human being. The 2019, let's see, he had 45 targets, 31 catches for 294 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah.
Inspiring.
Yeah. Last game he had against the Packers, home game, he had 2 targets for 1 catch for 6 yards. Where's he out of? I'm trying to even think what. Let's check his bio. Because, I mean, like, he's not a guy you thought much of. He was a 7th-round pick. Jeez. Out of Colorado State. And I know BC is the short. I think it's like on BC or something. Yeah, seventh round pick from 2019. He is the number two receiver on that team. He's beating out Justin Jefferson right now. And here's the thing. Here's the big thing that gives me hope that I started off with and got slightly derailed here. There was no rookie camp. There was no setup camp. Like, all the camps were shortened. There were no preseason games. Who does this benefit? Teams who are staying the course with people they know. It benefits teams who were already good last year and didn't have to replace a lot of
things. The
Vikings
had 16 draft picks this year. Remember that.
Well, the Vikings are starting all new corners. They are starting two new guys in the middle of that defense. And I didn't know this, but they have former Badger Connolly as a backup Will linebacker on this team. But they're starting Mike Hughes. They're starting Holton Hill. So Cam Dantzler did not jump into that starting spot. They have Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris. And Harris is okay. And Smith is great. I mean, he is. Eric Kendricks is great, and they have nobody behind him. They have Troy Dye and Cameron Smith, who's actually out. They have Anthony Barr, and the only backup for the outside backers is like Ryan Connolly right now, who is very nice. I like him. But Eric Wilson playing the will backer here. And yeah, they got Danielle Hunter and Yannick Ngakoue, but the other guys up front are Shamar Stephen and Jaleel Johnson, who I think played Urkel. I could be wrong.
you're possibly. I'm trying.
Jaleel White. Sorry, everybody. And Hercules Mata'afa is the one of the backups, which I just love that name. But yeah, I mean, like, Jaleel Johnson is up there replacing Linval Joseph, who is now starting for the Chargers between Bosa and Gordon. And it's like, Melvin Ingram. Sorry. Yeah. So Ingram and Bosa, and then you've got Linval Joseph in the middle of that. So yeah, he's gone. Xavier Rhodes is busy starting for the Colts, and, you know, their other two corners are busy playing for the Bengals. Trey right. Waynes and,
That's what I was trying to get to right here. Sorry, I was looking for it in the background because everyone wants to talk about. And the Vikings, of course, much like the Trump campaign, are just going to flood the good that they got. And they've got this Yannick Ngakoue, and this is great. Look at the shiny piece here. Look at the shiny piece. Not taking away from the fact that they're starting all brand new cornerbacks and everybody else. I mean, who'd they
and
lose?
And without a regular offseason to get really ready for this. They didn't have that. They're starting a bunch of new people who have never played together on a defense. I mean, Ngakoue only just joined the team last week when we were talking about this here.
And had to be quarantined for a week, too, before he joined the team, so he wasn't participating with them. So he literally took the field with them this year, which means he'll have three sacks in this game. But anyways, so let's hear. So, of course, they lost Stephon Diggs before the season was even over last year, right? Was that in season or after season?
No,
that
was after traded season. Him to the Bills after the season, so they could go. Basically, the trade meant that they got Justin Jefferson. So they gave away a known commodity for a guy they hope, you know, if things turn out well, turns into Stephon Diggs.
Right, and now they're starting before Chris Johnson. So they also lost Linval Joseph, who is a very good defensive tackle.
Yeah,
they lost Trey Waynes.
Trey Waynes.
They lost Everson Griffin.
Yep.
They lost one of their starting offensive guards, Josh Klein. They also lost Xavier Rhodes and Andrew Sendejo, Mackenzie Alexander. Just for those of you keeping track at home, that's all three of their starting nickel cornerbacks from last year are gone.
Yep.
Mackenzie Alexander, Xavier Rhodes, and Trey Waynes. Who else did they lose? Laquan Treadwell, whatever.
Nobody cares. He got cut, too, so he's not even on a team right now.
Right, and they also lost Jaron Curse, who was one of their main people. Marcus Sherrills is also gone. Now, he was mostly a
return guy, return but very person, good.
But he was their dime back. He was their defensive dime back.
Oh, okay.
And Kentrell Brothers, who, whatever, he was a linebacker. But either way, they're missing a lot of people from last year. And it's, you know.
And they didn't have a lot of time to get ready for it.
It's all smoke and mirrors with the Vikings. And once again, their team has been built completely around what Zim wants, and that is a defensive-minded team. And they paid a ton of money for a B-minus, C-plus quarterback who they can't even protect, who the one thing he needs more than anything else is to sit in the pocket and be able to tear apart a defense, because that's what Kirk Cousins can do. If you give him time, he's very accurate and he's very cerebral, and he'll tear a defense apart. But the one thing he's proven is he can't be jarred. Well, you've done nothing to protect him. And not only that, you don't even have running backs that can protect him in the backfield in the pass protection. You've got nothing. You're splitting your running backs out to use them as wide receivers. And now with the departure of Stephon Diggs, Delvin Cook's going to get split out even more often to pull people out with him. They're just going to get run. I mean, it's going to be the Smith and Smith. It's going to be a cousin sandwich on Smith and Smith bread come Sunday.
I mean, like, he is going to rely on Adam Thielen, who made a living of being the second best receiver on a team with a very good receiver. Maybe not great, but very, very good. I mean, we would have taken him, obviously, on the team for the Packers last year. Yeah.
No, but as much as I'd rip on Stephon Diggs when he was on the Vikings, he was a very nice receiver. Yeah.
I mean, he's a bit crazy.
Got letter grades, he was a B plus. He's top 20.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit crazy at times, but I mean, he produced. I mean, he really did, and he put out stuff. I mean, like, we don't know what Justin Jefferson is yet, and he didn't get his full rookie camp, which is kind of like what we talked about last week, where the number of people are very mad at, you know, Jordan Love for not being amazing. You know, like, oh, why isn't he doing all this stuff? Why isn't he, you know, killing it in practice? We should have seen something by now. You're like, he didn't get a rookie camp. He showed up when everybody else showed up, and of course he's behind guys who have been there for 3 and 4 years.
And that's why Tim Boyle's going to be the backup quarterback this year.
Right, because he didn't get the full advantage that a normal drafted quarterback would have coming in, and it definitely hurts. And this is going to hurt the Vikings. I mean, like, it definitely is going to be something that's going to put them behind. Like, Irv Smith Jr. should be the starting tight end on this team for the Vikings. He is a better talent than Kyle Rudolph. He is better athletically. He's faster. He just is the better talent, but they can't do it right now. Kyle Rudolph is still the starter on this team on that point. And part of it is because we can't get rid of the kind of dialogue we already know, because we didn't have enough time to evaluate these people against anything other than your own team. Mm-hmm. In the same reason why, like you just said, Boyle is the second quarterback. Why? He's already been in this for 2 years. And additionally, A.J. Dillon shows up as a third running back on the depth chart. Why? Because you have Jamal Williams, who you know. You have a known commodity against a team you're going to go play. Jamal Williams is going to get snaps this week. This week, yeah. He's going to play.
Oh, swag. What, this is Swag Daddy's third or fourth year? Third year?
This is the fourth year for both him and Jones. They're both drafted that same year, along with what's his name out of Utah State, who was super athletic but never turned into anything. And then, yeah, Dexter Williams and all that. But yeah, I think that that's what gives the Packers the edge here, even if they're going to have to go in and play this game elsewhere. I mean, I'm not that worried about that portion of it, because, you know, they're going to play in Minnesota, but Minnesota is this is like their first preseason game. They don't understand what their defense is yet. They haven't gotten to showcase it against anybody. And Ngakoue has been practicing for a week. And yeah, he's great. And that it's better on defense. It will be better on defense than it would be on offense, and will be on that Vikings offense when they're going to be throwing the ball to, you know, BC Johnson and all that. But I mean, like, it's going to be different because they're not going to have their communication down. They're not going to have their timing down. It's going to change some things. And you think that just like a defensive end, well, you don't, Aaron, of course, but
no,
a lot of people
listening. I think they can airflot them.
Yeah. Like you think that a defensive end just shows up and all they got to do is this, and you're like, no, there's a ton of reads, and also they play what we say, they run games. You know, like there are end tackle games that happen all the time. There are stunts, there are cross plays that are done. There's a lot of handoff things that way. There are different things that get done that are harder to teach the timing of them when you haven't practiced with your D tackle before for a week. Because, yeah, live practicing, there's a lot of step work, there's a lot of footwork that goes into it in terms of running a good stunt play. Like, you know, where a tackle pushes hard towards the offensive tackle. Defensive tackle pushes hard outside, going into that that tackle guard gap, okay, the B gap, instead of taking his A gap, pushes hard into that B gap and pushes the tackle. And then you got a guy who takes one step in off the defensive end and then hooks all the way back around towards A gap. And that stuff takes practice. Like, you don't think it does. Like, it seems like it's an easy thing to do. These are 300-pound men who are professional athletes, and there's another 300-pound men on the other side. There's another group of them trying to stop them. It takes practice. It doesn't happen day one, and it's going to be rough for a week. The Vikings will get, I think, a little bit better on defense as the year goes on, but I think basically with the Zimmer style, they're going to get more and more frustrated as well as the season goes on if they don't start off really well. And the Vikings are going to have an interesting start to it, because they got the Packers and they got to go to Indianapolis, who could be very interesting this year, but I don't know that I think the Vikings can beat them. And then Tennessee at Houston at Seattle. It's like, yeah, that could be a rough start. And the Vikings are traditionally a team that starts off quickly, and if things aren't going well, they fade. And if things are going well, they just roll. So yeah, we'll see how that picks out for them here. And I think especially with Zimmer, because Zimmer is a guy who just, he lives on killing you on his own team. You know, he's just going to drive you into the ground, and he's an angry, bitter man. I don't know how it's going to go for the Vikings. I think the Packers win this.
Right. I do too. What did I see today? The Bleacher Report NFC North preview going into this weekend. And it was done by a young lady named Julie. I can't remember her last name, who admitted in the piece that she forgot that the Detroit Lions even existed until she started writing the article that day. She had a couple other shots too. She's like, the division that was so exciting last year is now the most stale division in all of football. And it's led by the Packers, who accidentally got to 13-3 last year. And it was really very, yeah, well. It was, you know, sometimes Bleacher Report can be hit or miss. This was definitely a hit,
yeah.
But she was talking about one of the bits where the first paragraph on each one was affected by COVID, and it was what players were lost. And then overview of the season, in front of fans or not in front of fans. And it was Chicago, absolutely not. Their mayor's hell-bent on getting the COVID numbers down, and this, that, and the next thing. And Packers and Detroit are kind of on the same boat where they're going to reevaluate after the first two home games,
yeah,
blah, 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 blah. And then they mention, he goes, U.S. Bank Stadium, which when it was built was intended to look like Superman's Fortress of Solitude, but instead ended up just looking like an REI.
Oh, that's true.
And that's like, yes.
An REI. Yes, that's pretty, yes, good, yeah.
I love it.
It's a weird, like, strange black building compared to what's around it. It sticks out very oddly.
And they're like, it's supposed to look like a Viking ship, and it's like, it looks nothing.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Like a Viking ship. No, I get that it has like a mast sticking out the end of one out of one end of it, but that just looks nothing like a Viking ship.
You know, what looks more like Viking ships is the Best Buy headquarters just off of, was it 494?
Yes, it does. What I was going to say, though, is that what U.S. Bank Stadium actually looks like is looks like the Jawas, big, big really tracked fortress in episode 4, where they come and pick up C-3PO and R2-D2, and it's that big weird-looking thing with the anvil front. That's actually what U.S. Bank Stadium
very
looks
true.
Like. What?
That's exactly right. The Vikings right now, according to what I'm seeing on ESPN, the Vikings are giving 3 points at this point. I'd bet that, I think, because I think the Packers are going to win this. And I don't think I don't feel horribly confident about like a big win, but I think the Packers win this by 7.
I think they've got the better team. You know, I don't think there's going to be any blowout wins anywhere in the league this year, this week. No, not this week. I think if they're all going to be pretty close. Now, some of the teams that are candidates for maybe blowing out another team would be Kansas City. Yeah. They played last, and their team's pretty much coming back intact.
Yeah, they didn't have to replace almost anything, basically. They had very few holes.
They're playing the Texans, right?
Yeah, that could be an interesting game coming off with everybody healthy.
Texans are healthy, but they also lost their best offensive player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun Watson was 1B, but I mean,
yeah, without having
they had a top 3 wide receiver that they just let walk.
Well, they got Randall Cobb though, so they'll be fine.
Oh, well, there you go. So, I mean, so that's a team. San Francisco might, I don't know who they're playing. They're playing someone from the NFC West. So Seattle and or Arizona and or the Rams. But I'd say that they'd probably be able to blow somebody out.
Titans are back together. The Cardinals, it looks like.
Yeah. Patriots, you watch. They're just going to blow somebody out this week. Cam Newton's going to go for 4 touchdowns. It's going to be stupid.
I think people are sleeping on Cam Newton, but yeah. But that's what we got here. I'm going to say it's going to be something weird, like Packers. By weird, I mean I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be an odd game to watch because I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes. I don't think Rodgers is going to turn the ball over, but I think that there's going to be some issues here and there, just kind of like looking out of sync in terms of being a team. But I think the Packers, I think my call is going to be something like 17-10 is kind of where I'm leaning. It seems on the low end of scoring, but it really, like, the Packers defense needed basically no additions. They changed an inside linebacker. They're bringing back their corners. They're bringing back their safeties. They're bringing back the entire defensive front. They replaced Blake Martinez with a guy who's better than Blake Martinez. And by the way, Oren Burks, who I'm very excited for, has been named into that number 2 spot up there next to Kirksey. So that's, I guess that's really the only change, is the middle of that line. And yeah, I think the Packers defense is going to look better right now. I think they're going to be able to come in there more complete and not having to change a whole lot. The Packers offense is essentially the same. We had to change out a right tackle, which is going to cause some problems, obviously. But we're getting back some guys who have been on the team and been with the team, but also, you know, like we got St. Brown, who's coming back, even though he wasn't with the team last year. It's only because of injury. This is his 3rd year with the team. He knows the team. He's been in the film rooms, even though he's been injured. He knows all the stuff that's been going on and what they looked like last year and what happened and where he fits. So I think that the Packers pull this off. I think it'll probably be low scoring. Watch it be something crazy, though. What do you think?
Right. I'm going to go with the Packers winning 18-11.
Beautiful.
I'm gonna start picking games this year with odd scores where, you know, 11 can only be scored 2 possible ways: a touchdown, a 2-point conversion,
and touchdown, a field goal, 3 field goals, and a safety. Right,
3 field goals and a safety. Yes, and 18 can only be scored by kicking 6 field goals or a myriad of other ways. The only other fun ones are 5 and 8, which 8 can only be scored 2 ways, and 5 obviously can only be scored 1 way.
Yeah.
4 can only be scored 1 way as well. So, I believe the Packers will win 18-11, and it will be the Packers will be jumping out to an 18-0 lead by halftime, and then a very boring second half. So. Jeez.
All right. What we'll move on to next is what we'll say the Requiem for a Bucs season. We would normally put something like this towards the front, but with the Packers starting, that's obviously the biggest news in Wisconsin this week. So we're sticking with our Packers at the very top of our coverage. The Bucs absolutely fall apart against Miami this week. It was pathetic to watch. They never got anything going at any stretch. You never felt comfortable with any lead or position. There were in game 3 and game, well, not game 5, but in game 3, they had a lead and then got completely blown out in the fourth. Just completely blown out. Somebody got upset with me because I think it was in game 1. I said the Bucks looked lethargic and a little lost out there. And he's like, hey, they scored 40 points in the fourth quarter. You don't know anything. I'm paraphrasing because he didn't say anything, and he was a little more laced with words I would not use in our podcast, but it's like, you don't know anything about sports. And I was like, did you notice that we then lost, you know, like 81-60 the rest of the way? I was like, I mean, yeah, they look lost. There were a ton of turnovers. The Bucks were turning the ball over in a ridiculous fashion. The Bucks are normally a great passing team, and they couldn't get anything going. They couldn't drive. The drive and the kick out has been big for the Bucks. And they weren't doing any of it. And today they look just hapless. They couldn't hit a shot at all. And I'm not going to do any ref blaming on this. The Bucks couldn't hit their shots when they got their shots.
Well, in fairness to what you just said about how we ran the podcast in order of precedence today, had the Bucks actually like closed out and won in 5 games, we might have led with the Bucks today. But if it was like game 7 today and it came down to the wire and the Bucks just gave it its all and Miami was just a better team, No, this series was just garbage from the get-go. I mean, even Game 4, which they won, that was, like I said, John, that was the outlier game. Like, the other four games weren't even close. The Heat, I mean, I knew we were in trouble after Game 1. Like, when Jimmy Buckets just went crazy, and he looked like the all-star. He looked like the league MVP. He looked like a homeless man as well, but he looked really good. And he was all over the court. He was stealing the ball. He was in everybody's face and just drilling big shots. And nobody from the Bucks was even looking like. And honest God, John, I watched maybe 20 minutes total of the next four games. Like, because it was just.
I watched huge chunks of it. It was hard to watch, but I felt like I needed to sit there and watch some of this.
Well, I had it on. I'm just saying, how much did I actually watch? Not a whole lot. Like, I would do things around the house and then look up every once in a while and just watch, you know, another shot bang off the back of the rim, Miami pass it down the court and score, and then go, well, I don't want to watch this. I reserve this feeling and this deep just hate in my darkest part of my soul for the Packers and the Packers only. And the Brewers can share in on it once in a while. Bucks, you've done nothing in my lifetime to deserve any part of me just hating this. I'm too much of a Wisconsin sports fan. Win something, and then maybe I'll feel heartbroken when you show up and just I can't even say that word. Let's hear it. Fall apart in the playoffs. You know, it just don't. I can't even muster up enough emotion. Like, it's like starting from game three of last year's Eastern Conference Finals, where they just died like a fly in the cupboard against the Raptors. Came out, the season was looking great, and yes, I know it wasn't exactly the most perfect situation ever, and here we are playing preseason or postseason basketball in September, you know, after a 4-month layoff. But still, come on, guys, like, there was no effort given. Like, that's why I said at the top of the show, I'm about ready to go back to being a Minnesota sports fan, or just revert to a Minnesota sports fan, because at least if I cheer for the Timberwolves, I'll never have any hope.
Well, I don't feel, I mean, like, I don't fall down. I mean, I want to see, it's kind of like in all other sports, I would love to see, except for football, I'd love to see a Bucks and Timberwolves final. I'd root for both those teams in any time when they're not playing each other. Same with the Twins and Brewers, except for the games where they play each other. I root for the Twins. But yeah. Here's the thing that kind of gets me, and we'll, a couple things to just kind of wrap up this season here. First off, even though Dragic, Crowder, and Jimmy Butler all basically just killed on this series. Like, Dragic was all over the place. He was playing great. He was seeing the floor really well. Butler was just an incredible force out there at times. And Crowder hit incredible shots at big moments. The only thing they could talk about was Tyler Hero. And only because he is a guy from Milwaukee who committed to Wisconsin for a full year before changing his commitment at the last minute and ditching Wisconsin and then spending all his time doing nothing except complain about Wisconsin sports for whatever reason. He's a weird cat, and he's also not a starter. It looks like he's nice, but he was their fourth leading scorer tonight and played the most minutes of anybody. Off the bench, by the way.
Right.
So it's just strange to me that scenario keeps getting played out. And they're like, oh, people are mean to him. They're like, because he's a jerk to everybody. That's why. Mm-hmm. It's nobody else's fault. He's a jerk to people, and so people don't like him. The other big things that I think to talk about here are just the coaching has definitely become an issue. The amount of playing time that has been given to several of the starters in games that were, I mean, they're playoff games. We got it during the first bit. We got it during the regular season stuff. My assumption, as you've heard on this show several times, is that the Bucks were saving them to make sure we could put in, you know, a 40-minute game if need be, or a 37-minute game if need be. And what they said, the fun stat that was put up there, is that Nick Nurse played Giannis for more minutes than his season average during the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like 30.8 to 30.2. And, you know, he wasn't available tonight because he's got the sprained ankle. But still, just the fact that he is not played several of the big players in the situations where we definitely need to must-win games. Hasn't done that. One of the people who's going to be an interesting name that's going to be floated definitely, and we talked about him, is a guy we both love. Billy Donovan is being let go by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Has been reported today that he will be released at least. And I have to say, I think Billy Donovan makes this team win because this team's way more talented than Oklahoma City, and he has been playing with smoke and mirrors in Oklahoma City with guys leaving constantly, losing all of his talent and having to deal with backup guys or guys that are kind of cast off from other teams. He's got Chris Paul, but Chris Paul keeps, after 2 or 3 years, is a guy that every team wants to get rid of. And right. Is a team that apparently a lot of people are talking about how the Bucks might likely want to try to trade for CP3. I'd rather take Billy Donovan, but if we could get the two of them over here to Milwaukee, I think the Bucks have a better chance with that group because then you have three guys. You can have CP3, and you don't have to have Giannis try to create on his own. You're going to have to get rid of a bunch of depth on that bench, but you're going to have a better front end on that team, at least for a 2 or 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing to think about. The other thing I want to say before I kind of pass it to you is more of our Bucks, our NBA kind of aficionado between the two of us. I want to just kill the Giannis being traded kind of nonsense. People are acting like he's a free agent. And one of the greatest stories I read this week is somebody saying in Twitter something about, talk to a lot of execs on other teams, and they're saying that if they lose, Giannis is going to sign with the Heat in the offseason. Like, first off, those execs aren't allowed to talk to Giannis. So they have no idea what he's thinking. And you're taking their opinion for whatever reason. I don't know, because they have no idea what he's thinking because they're not allowed to speak to him or they could be fired and fined. And also, he can't sign with another team. He's under contract. He could be traded. The Bucks aren't trading him. They're going to be looking to lock him up to the max, which is more money than other teams can give him. I mean, I grant the NBA players can make those things happen, but I don't see it happening for him. I just don't see Giannis being that sort of player at this point in his career. I'll get your thoughts on the several things I just mentioned right now.
Oh, okay. First of all, I would like to say that I would not mind having Chris Paul on the Bucks. Number one, because that would give the Bucks a legitimate second superstar. People say lots of nice things about Chris Middleton. I saw someone compare his jump shot to Michael Jordan's jump shot the other day. That was very nice. Chris Middleton, to me, is kind of like Wiggins. Yeah, he's a max player, but he shouldn't be getting max money. And I think a lot of the reason why the Bucks gave Chris Middleton max money is because they were panicked because they didn't know who else they could get to be second fiddle to Giannis. Because at the time, I mean, Kevin Durant wasn't going to come here, I don't think. No. I don't think that was ever a possibility.
No.
I remember Westbrook when he was a little, I remember that was kind of some heat last year. Remember that? Talking when Westbrook left OKC and ended up down in
Houston.
God, the Thunder had Kevin Durant, Westbrook, and Harden all on the same team. Think about that. And Serge Ibaka. Yeah. That was all on one team.
That's a crazy
on
team.
On one team. Oh,
and
my God.
Never won.
And anyways, they lost to the Heat in the finals, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they lost to LeBron and the Heat. I still have my OKC hat. Like, I was a huge OKC fan for like 2 years. Because they were like the Green Bay Packers of the NBA for a little bit there.
Yeah.
Practicing in a old flower warehouse and stuff like that. And the only reason why Oklahoma City even got a team was because they hosted the Pelicans when they were the Hornets after Hurricane Katrina. And someone went, holy smokes, we can put an NBA team here. Yeah. Bring on Chris Paul. Chris Paul's a legitimate star. He really is. Chris Paul kept him in that series against the Rockets. And yeah, he wears out his welcome. He's also the NBA's, he's one of the player reps for the Players Association in the NBA. Yeah. So he's very outspoken. he also does State Farm commercials with Aaron Rodgers. So bring him home, boys. And I would say this too. I'm a huge Billy Donovan fan. I like Billy Donovan. I think that he should go back to college basketball personally, because I think he's still got a couple more national championships in him.
That doesn't do any good to me, though. It's all about me.
I know. I know. I think of the same thing with Brad Stevens out in Boston, too. But
yeah. He's good with Boston.
Yeah, and I would like to see him off Boston's bench, because he has a lot to do with Boston staying with it every year. True. But Donovan wanted to come up here, but I don't see Coach Bud. After this series, they could legitimately fire Coach Bud, because that was a pretty poor performance. That's the kind of series that gets people who otherwise wouldn't be on a hot seat fired.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
So, but he'll get the benefit of the doubt. It was COVID, the bubble, this, that, and the next thing. They'll have Bud back for one more year.
That definitely hurt it a lot. To be clear, the idea is, like, they were rolling through the league. They were just killing it. And then they had to take, you know, several months off and then come back to it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that definitely hurt. That definitely is something that hurt this team going forward. But I don't know how much. If they could get Billy Donovan, I would say you get Billy Donovan and you fire whoever it is you have right now, because I don't.
Or just Donovan, you know, the singer from the 60s. He was awesome.
Was it the Scottish, what did they call him?
He had a 3-octave range. I know that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. It was like a
beautiful voice.
Yeah. The only things they'll say on the Brewers are the Brewers continue to just mystify me. Yeah. Underwhelm, mystify. Justin Smoke was DFA'd and then released. Brock Holt turned into nothing for this team. I think he's sent to the alternate site and all that. The guys they went out to go get, and I was feeling pretty good about Smoke and Holt at the beginning of the season, but they're clearly kind of at the end of their tether at this point, and they don't have anything left to actively contribute to this team. And yeah, the guys they went out to go get this year didn't do anything. And they did so at a point in which there wasn't COVID. These guys were signed at a point in which that wasn't an issue. And the only thing you can say in terms of the fairness issue towards the Brewers is, if it had been 162 games, I think a lot of this would have been different. The pressures would have been different. You could have hit yourself out of a lot of these things. We could have sent them to the minor leagues for a week or two and gotten, you know, something back in terms of confidence. But when the guys you went out to go get don't produce, you just there's not much you can do. The Brewers lost again today, having a rough span against the American League Central right now, with splitting with Detroit, losing 2 out of 3 with the Indians, and then getting a loss today with Detroit. Maybe they'll split with Detroit again. I don't know. 18-22, and in fairness, only 2 games out of the wild card at this point. They're right behind San Francisco, who's 21-21. The Brewers are 18-22, 2 games out of the wild card for getting into the playoffs. And granted, an expanded playoff, but it's going to be
in the last 5 games of the season are against St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, the Brewers next week, I think, is the week where they're going to have to play, or not, it's the week after this. When we come back next week, we'll be talking about getting ready for 8 games in 7 days in one stretch there, where they're going to have to play 2 doubleheaders against St. Louis. I think St. Louis is a team they can beat. If they can do some of that, they'll just kind of maybe squeak into a playoff, because I don't really know that I can trust Miami or San Francisco to be that great. St. Louis is, they're up there in one of those spots too. They're 18-17, so they're several games ahead of the Brewers, but Brewers could make up a lot of that. They still got to chase Colorado, San Francisco, Miami as well on this, though. So I don't know. And none of the teams below them really bother me either. I guess I just don't see any of those teams catching the Brewers at this point.
Nobody bothers me at all this year. Nobody's really, except for like the Twins. A couple of the American League teams are pretty strong.
Yeah.
What do we got here in the National League for strong teams?
The Dodgers are 30-12. The Padres, 26-17. They've been killing.
They've been on fire.
The Cubs
the are kids. 20,
25-18 for the Cubs.
Whatever. I'm not worried for the Cubs for another 100 years.
The Cubs are the only team that the Brewers have had a winning streak against. They won three straight against the Cubs. And that is the only 3-game winning streak the Brewers have had all year.
Yes, we actually had to deep dive that before the show because me and John were thinking about have the Brewers had a winning streak this year because a winning streak constitutes 3 straight wins.
Yeah.
And they've had one. And that was, yes, when they beat the Cubs 3 games out of 4.
That was the last bit of optimism I had for the Brewers.
And like you said, as far as underwhelming goes, one thought too, I meant to say this, but so smoke, only in baseball can you be a starting first baseman one day and less than a week later just be released. Yeah. Like, what kind of existence is that? And then the other thing too is, like you're saying, underwhelming. So we went through the whole schedule before we started here, just looking for a 3-game winning streak, and there's just the one. Otherwise, the most games they've won in a row is 2. But on top of that, too, they've had 1 4-game losing streak, and that was 2 games after the 3-game winning streak, and that's when they got swept by the Pirates, right? When they got beat up on by the Pirates.
Yes.
Yeah. And they've had a 3-game losing streak and a 4-game losing streak and only 1 3-game winning streak. That's how underwhelming they are. It's just that everything else is 1 win here, 1 win there, 2 wins, 2 losses, 1 win, 2 losses, 2 wins, 1 loss. Like, it's never, they never get on fire. They don't, I mean, except for the one series against the Cubs.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and they never just royally stink either. You know,
well, I mean, individual games, yes, but not for long stretches. Yeah.
So, I mean, the other most homer take I've heard in a while, too, is that from a Brewer's standpoint I can't even remember who I heard. It was on 1070, the big 1070 out of Madison today. I don't even know who said it on Heller's show, but it was, well, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals, because of their like regional cities, they've gotten to beat up on the Kansas City Royals all year. Shut up. The Brewers play the Pirates, who are the worst team in baseball.
Same schedule as the Cardinals. I mean, we're playing the same regional thing. So, yeah, don't.
Right. And not only that, but yeah, don't, they have a couple more games against the Royals than we do against the Royals. But we have more against the Pirates than they do. And
no, the Pirates are divisional. So that's the same.
Is it the same? Either way. Okay, so despite scheduling whatever, still, the Brewers play the Pirates. Just, you know, like, even if it wasn't,
yeah,
the same
should have beaten
thing,
the Pirates.
Like, this is the most homer take ever. Like, oh well, they're beating up on the Royals, and it's like
we basically have the same schedule as the Cardinals, except they play us and we play them. Here's the thing coming up is the Brewers are going to get another game against the Tigers tomorrow, the 9th, and then they'll get a day off, they'll play 3 games against the Cubs, and then they will start this fun stretch of 5 games in 3 days against St. Louis, 1 day off, Kansas City for 3 days, 3 days with the Reds, and then 4 games in 3 days against the Cardinals in St. Louis. Yeah. But 5 games at home in 3 days against the Cardinals. So yeah, if the Brewers can somehow find a way to make hay against the Cubs and Cardinals, they'll be all right. But they're probably going to kind of split that series and end up back where they are right now. So, because I don't feel confident in any of the hitting on this team at this point. Like, Yelich isn't hitting. Hira isn't hitting. Nobody on this team is particularly hitting well for more than 2 or 3 games in a stretch. So, I'll feel better next year, and we'll see what they can add. But over the remaining games in this season, I don't feel this is a playoff game or playoff team. We'll see how that goes. The only things we'll leave you with this week, because we're a little over time, but that's because we're getting ready for the very beginning of Packer season here, and we're trying to get positive. We're going to end with some positive stuff. The Badgers got a commitment from Nolan Rucci, 5-star offensive lineman. Dude is like 6'8", 295, out of Pennsylvania, committed to the Badgers today. He's already got a video up with him and Graham Mertz together, which is amazingly fun for me. Best part of my week by far. That's it. You know, nothing my kids have done matches watching that. And I'm sorry to say that, but they're not listening. So, that's great. 5-star recruit at tackle. And I mean, look 2 years down the road, the Badgers have had some of their best recruiting classes ever in the last 2 years. And I mean, Crist is just murdering this. And if you talked about this a couple of times, maybe the recruiting hurts for the Big Ten from this taking the season off. And the answer is no, because it doesn't affect next season. And the kids are coming. They're coming at this point. And we're still having a top 20 recruiting class at UW. And it's going to be fun to watch these guys get better as the season goes on and get them into camp and start seeing these teams over the next couple of years. The only other thing I'll say is, hey, the Stanley Cup is still on, everybody. And if you need a team to root for, sadly, because they're a warm weather team, I would say the Dallas Stars are going to be a fun team for Badger fans because Joe Pavelski is still kicking it out there. And that dude has so much heart. And he runs on just an amazing amount of adrenaline because he never, never stops skating. He is just an incredible amount of hustle. He was on the last Badger national championship team, which, if you didn't know, Wisconsin has more national championships in men's hockey than, you know, Minnesota does. But Pavelski was on that last team. He's also a local kid, grew up in Plover, played for Spash, which is Stevens Point Area Senior High, went to UW, won a national championship with UW, played for San Jose for a long time, and now he's playing with Dallas, playing with the Dallas Stars. And while I'm loath to root for warm weather hockey teams, with my Bruins out of it, I'm definitely pulling for Dallas to pull this out for Joey P, hoping for a kid from Plover to get himself a Stanley Cup and bring that back to an area that I know very well, an area that is essentially where I almost live right now. So, Aaron, anything to add before we wrap this up for this week?
John, you ignorant. No, this Dallas Star should never win another Stanley Cup. They destroyed my childhood when Norm Green took the North Stars out of Minnesota and moved them south. I hope Dallas falls into a hole and burns.
I understand. In other
news, I was going to bring up that you brought up the Big Ten stuff. You see all this stuff about politicians from six states sending letters to the Big Ten officials to reconsider the season. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine getting in on the talks now.
There was an interesting thing with the Big Ten where they found that it was initially reported a little high, but it sounds like something like 15% of the COVID tests that they had among Big Ten players resulted in myocarditis, which is an inflammation around the heart, which can lead to cardiac arrest if you exert yourself. By the way, football players exert themselves. The Big Ten did their medical math on this.
Not in the classroom, though, John.
No, but they did it. They did it on the field. The Big Ten did their homework on this one, so I don't expect them to play this year. They're still talking like if they can get the numbers going in the right direction, they might play.
Well, if that's the case, then they'll never play football again, John.
That's ridiculous, and don't say that.
It's not going away.
But
I'm just saying, it's crazy. It is crazy no matter how you slice it, but.
But when it, no, come on. I mean, the difference is saying like, oh, it'll never go away. Right. But there will be vaccines and different ways of treating it and different ways of handling it. And if you can make sure that your players constantly have the ability to have a vaccine available prior to and prevent the incurrence of this, that's different than saying we have nothing. God bless. And the SEC doesn't care about their players. The SEC is not about their own players. Go read the book, The Blind Side, because it's not the movie. Anyhow. Thank you again for joining us, everybody, this week. Good day to all our friends out in Australia and all of our friends in Europe. I don't know how to say anything in Ukrainian or Belarusian or I don't know enough Italian or anything else. But hello to all of our friends in the UK and Ireland. And again, thank you for joining us this week. Please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. Most importantly, rate and review us. And remember that whether you're on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
Did you know that Sandra Bullock won a Razzie and an Oscar in the same year for Blindside and for Miss Congeniality? No, what was that?
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening and on Wisconsin.